Hello and welcome to Q&A Quest episode 397. I'm your host, I hate HTML, Mike Apps, AK Wheels, with me as always.
FBM2, David McBurney, Family Master.
Two? The sequel?
I'm moving to next gen.
Oh, shit.
I have a better processor.
Hello, my name is Wheels64.
Oh, the Crystal Shards?
Yes.
Oh, hello. Kirby game?
Hello, I'm Wheels360.
I don't think any game had 360 in the name.
No, I'm a system.
Why are you like this?
I'm a system.
So you're about to Red Ring?
Okay, bad example. Hello!
Are you one of the late models 360s that didn't have mechanical issues?
Hello, I'm the Wheels Jag... Oh, wait a minute, no. It's bad.
This is getting worse. Those don't work either.
I'm the Wheels Lynx.
The Wheels GX4000?
You can flip me upside down and I still work the same.
Oh, you pressed a flip button. I explained the GX4000 joke. The children know of the GX4000.
I'm going to say no.
I don't think you know what the GX4000
is. No, I have no earthly idea.
So there's a British electronics manufacturing / distribution concern known as Amstrad. The GX4000 was their attempt to break into the console market based off of their semi-popular line of personal computers, the CPC. And it was known for exploding.
Oh, dear. That's
the power
good.
Supply was not good.
Oh. Okay, then.
Yeah, not great. Just a fire hazard from birth.
Oh, Fireman are coming out with this question all the fuck already.
Going for it.
Any comment on the Bungie art thief and the stories recently come out about how toxic the leadership on the team was? I have not seen any articles about the leadership. And I don't really care anymore.
Yeah, apparently the thing that I've heard is just that the morale at Bungie, it's not good right now because of everything going on with that. Can't say I blame them. I would say that based on what information is in public, there is, at best, an extreme dereliction in the art team to keep tabs on where things are coming from. But I think that game is... I think they kind of have to delay it and do and make some reworks just to show that they're taking this seriously.
It sounds like they already are. I mean, at least they responded pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. I have no doubts that people within Bungie want to delay it. I have doubts that Sony is willing to delay it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and that's the real rock and a hard place.
I mean, my worry would be, oh, this affects the Destiny 2 team that just had a banger of a reveal of the next expansion that fans are seemingly pretty excited about. So,
but don't forget... worry. The incubation project that got switched to a new team that Sony made Team LFG making frog type games. Still can't get over that they put frog type games.
What the fuck?
Apparently, frog type games is a term for games in the style of Warframe. I don't know who uses that, but apparently that's where that came from.
Okay. But yeah, it's pretty clear the upper management of Bungie has been pretty shit
for
quite some time.
At least last like half decade, possibly decade.
So something needs to change, and I don't know what that is. I don't know if a complete takeover by Sony is a good thing.
It's really hard to say. Like, Sony leadership is also super bad right now.
Yeah, so I don't know.
I don't know if there's a path out of this that doesn't that isn't going to be extremely painful.
I mean, if I were in charge here, I would, number one, delay the game. Number two, I would try and hire said artist, not just try and compensate them. I would try to hire said artist whose art was stolen.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's been some issues in the past, but, I mean, some of those were just like, okay, they used a piece of art that very much looked like official art, so I could forgive that. This is pretty fucked up.
Oh, good lord. Okay, that's definitely a smell of smoke coming in. I'm going to need to close my window.
Okay. It has to do with some of the contractors the party is hired, and they didn't do due diligence, but then the rise of subcontractors in created injuries has to do with, among other things, the ability to claim plausible deniability. I mean, it's impossible to say whether or not anyone else actually knew about this. But my big surprise is that this hasn't happened more already. Especially with AI garbage that I assume at some point is going to like full on steal art. And then someone's going to use it and it's going to be like, oh, yeah, I generated that with AI. I didn't steal your art. Not that that's what happened here, because that's definitely not what happened here. But I'm.
But that would be just second generation stealing. That'll be hell.
Yes. But yeah, I'm surprised with lots of all the subcontractors' shit and whatnot that this hasn't happened more. But maybe people are better than generally than we give them credit for. And perhaps this really was just one shitty person who just stole some work and then moved on. I have no idea. But I mean, are stolen art or not, regardless, the reception to the alpha of Marathon,
like that game's not ready for prime time either way,
was not good or not good enough. So like,
yeah, like it's for how important the project is, now is not the time for it to be out.
Yeah. So yeah, that's not good. It already has happened. Some gacha game that I don't play recently put out a trailer that used AI, and surprise, surprise, people discovered that the AI stole art.
Can't believe it.
This is the least surprising thing I've heard. But yeah, that sucks. And I mean, like I said, honestly, I'm more worried about morale and the Destiny team, who after they put out a banger of expansion and then a bunch of stupid fucking whiny people complained a lot and made it seem like the game was on its last legs or something.
Tell me how you really feel, Wills.
I don't like the Destiny community for the most part. I mean, the people I play with and like the LFG people are great, but just like the YouTubers and shit, some of who I actually watch, so I guess I'm part of the problem, just like for content have to just like doom and gloom all the fucking time. It is so goddamn fucking infuriating. Like any
live, I am the problem.
Any live service MMO-ish game is going to go through like lulls. It's just going to happen, and you got to chill the fuck out.
And the most deranged people in the world who only play one game and then complain that they are out of game to play,
yeah,
are also the people who make content around that game.
And it should have been obvious that, like, okay, some of the content's going to be a little light after the massive giant expansion that was supposed to, and did, nicely end a 10-year story. Like, okay.
I'm screaming dead game at no one for no reason.
People are ready to complain that the marketing people can be bad for business. I think they can just use AI instead of humans to reach out to customers. If you're going to say yes. Yep. AI is bad.
It's bad at its job, and it makes your game look cheap.
Yes. And whatever legitimate uses there are for it are just going to get buried in all this fucking shit.
Yeah, but yeah, like, ultimately, I do think that's something that people in marketing should very much keep in mind, is that people very quickly reach the point where it's like, oh, AI art, that looks cheap. That is a mark of being cheap. Mm-hmm. It makes the product look bad.
I see it everywhere. See it in Magic the Gathering playmats, where it's just like, these are bad. They look bad, and you should feel bad for displaying them. And it's everywhere, and it all looks so fucking bad. And I'm gonna swear some more, because it's so fucking annoying. But yes, this art controversy had nothing to do with AI, and it's bad.
This was the regular time. This was the plagiarism when you had to do it yourself.
So Final Fantasy Magic the Gathering set out. No, it comes out the week after the Switch 2.
Get wrecked, wallet.
My wallet is fucking destroyed. Thank
sobbing.
Thank God I got that Switch 2 pre-order at GameStop, where I could bring in a bunch of games and basically pay it off.
What did you sacrifice for it?
Mostly some garbage. I don't even remember. I finally...
You don't want to admit what it was. Stuff. don't want to admit having purchased it in the first place.
I finally divested myself from the multiple copies of multiple Legend of Heroes games I had.
Oh, which ones did you decide you didn't need?
The PlayStation versions.
Gotcha.
Because I'm never going
to... Yeah, I'm actually... Speaking of which, I actually just finally finished my run through of Cold Steel, so now I'm on Cold Steel 2. Sweet. And that's going well. I like Cold Steel. I think, if you don't mind me just rambling into what I've been playing for a little bit.
Yeah, let me just, let me talk about the Final Fantasy.
Yeah, go ahead and finish that
real quick. Because they've been doing lots of spoilers recently. And
I just want a Cactuar card. I don't intend to play it. I just want a single Cactuar card.
I can get you one. I have a box on pre-order.
if you get more than a playset's worth of Cactuars, send me a Cactuar.
I only play Commander, so a playset is one card. I cracked open a $200 card about a month ago, which finally sold, so that's going to mostly pay for my box.
Yeah, that actually works out pretty well for you.
Yeah.
But is there something in particular you're hoping to pull from that box?
I honestly don't know, because there's four commander decks that are kind of going to...
Jesus Christ!
Fill things nicely. I'll have
this seems like, as I know they've done a few of these crossover sets, this seems like an enormous one.
I mean, based on the giant presentation they did for it at PAX, which I kind of wish I'd gone to, seems like everyone involved in making it is super excited about it, which I didn't necessarily like get the sense from any of the other crossovers.
This is definitely a crossover that everyone involved wanted to be a part of.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I should say the Assassin's Creed crossover, which is a much smaller set, was actually extremely well done, and like the quality of the cards in it was fantastic.
I kind of doubt that any of the crossover sets have been badly done.
Fallout was kind of lame.
But is that Fallout's fault? Oh!
Yes, because Fallout's kind of lame. Doctor Who was bizarre.
I was going to say, if you call that lame, I would say that's in keeping with Doctor Who's aesthetic of being kind of lame.
No, I actually bought a few of those decks. It's
kind of cool. I'm putting it this way for you.
Yeah.
Doctor Who fans are the ones that are like, this is one of the greatest like villain factions of all time, and it is literally just a trash can.
Nice.
That's right, fuck you. Daleks are the lamest things humans have ever created.
Kind of. honestly, I think this is the full, real, like, full-on set crossover, because a lot of them... Assassin's Creed was the only one that was, like, a set. It's mostly been, like, secret layers, which are just, like, limited-time drops of a small number of reprinted cards. They're not, like, new cards, they're just... Like, here's SpongeBob, which is actually just a reprint of this card.
Yeah, like, those ones are just, like, we made a meme.
Yeah, the secret layers are just, like...
Counterspell is that one where he's, like, looking like a chicken that people do when they're making fun of someone.
Yeah, but those cards are... They are literally a card that already exists, and they count as the card that already exists, so you can't even play...
They have the same name, so they count as the same.
Yeah. But yeah, this is going to be the full-on, like, this is a full set crossover. And yeah, it seems... Not only does it seem like the art's good, the cards are good, the flavor is, like, beyond spot-on. Like, okay.
Some of these will be reprinted without Final Fantasy artwork, and it will be weird one day.
Probably. But some of them, like, okay, how do we do summons in Magic? Well, there's an enchantment type called Sagas, which only lasts for a certain number of turns.
Makaitoshi Saga.
And we have enchantment creatures. So we make Saga creatures. So they're creatures that last for a limited amount of time. Perfect. 10 out of 10, no notes.
Make a Romancing Saga set.
Also, the Final Fantasy pre-con is my favorite mix of three colors, so someone knows me. I appreciate it.
Hooray!
Beyond that, just little things like there's... Oh, I forget what it was. There's a card of Sephiroth murdering Aeris, which... I forget what it does, but it just seemed... It's just like him swinging down with the sword. Perfect.
Spoilers!
And then there's like a version of Terra that transforms into a Saga enchantment creature. And then when that runs out, she switches back to her normal form.
Morph!
It's good stuff. They did a really good job on this set. And it's gonna sell like crazy, so pre-order it. It's
already pre-sold like crazy, actually. Yes. So pre-ordering it may not actually be an option.
Yes, I pre-ordered it before it went too crazy.
Before it was cool.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, now you can talk about Cold Steel.
Yeah, so I finished Cold Steel 1. What I would describe it is that it's kind of an odd game. So, like, when people talk retrospectively about Trails in the Sky 1 or Trails from Zero, they'll often talk about how their entire games have set up. I've done this before. And, like, yeah, there's like, a lot of stuff that exists largely as set up for their subsequent chapters. But they're definitely telling complete stories. They just are contextualizing. Like, it's just that a lot of stuff exists to be paid off in the sequel. But like, if you just play Zero or you just play Trails in the Sky 1, they are complete, if relatively smaller scale, stories that are paid off in their sequels. And like, I need to clarify before I make this statement that I don't dislike Cold Steel 1. I had a lot of fun with Cold Steel 1. Cold Steel 1 is not a complete story. Not even close. It's
like, it's all, it is a pure setup game. It's designed to, like, here's the cast, here's this enormous cast, relative to the previous games, it's a much, much larger cast. And, it's walking a very strange tightrope, because Cold Steel 1 is in parallel with the Crossbell games, and so is Cold Steel 2, as far as I can tell. I don't know the finer details of how long Cold Steel 2 takes place over, but, like, broadly speaking, it's in parallel, and it kind of it doesn't necessarily assume you know what's happening in Crossbell, but it is very definitely being written in such a way as to parallel and coincide with it. But with Cold Steel 1, you have those parallels with Crossbell that represent a lot of what's going on, but they don't unto themselves add up to a real story. You're not seeing your characters are reacting to what's happening in Crossbell to an extent, but there isn't there's a lot of setup for a story that's happening in Erebonia that hasn't really blossomed into much. So most of the game ends up being about, like, learning about all of your party members and what their whole deal is. Like I said, because the cast is huge comparative to any of the prior games. Other than, like, Trails in the Sky the Third, which was all about being enormous cast of characters all getting little epilogues. So the moment-to-moment plot is pretty threadbare. It's all just, like I said, people will accuse Sky 1 or 0 of being just set up, but they are telling a complete story unto themselves, and Cold Steel 1 just isn't. Right as it gets to the point where, like, what one would assume was the core narrative is starting, I wouldn't even say it ends, it just stops. Like, the game just stops. You can definitely tell that I believe the original plan, as far as anyone's ever been aware, was that Cold Steel was supposed to be two games. But those games were if 1 and 2 was one game and if 3 and 4 was a second game. And so you can kind of see how that would work, although such a game would be either of those games would be unmanageably long. I think a reasonable completion time for Cold Steel 1 is 50 to 60 hours. And I suspect that Cold Steel 2 is probably pretty similar, if not longer. A compulsorily 120 hour video game is just unworkable, unmanageable. One could make arguments, like, I haven't played enough of 2 yet to say whether they should have cut anything. It's a complicated subject when a story is that long and has that many characters, and ultimately we kind of also have to contend with the fact that it was quite successful. Especially in the West, hardcore Trails fans have a tendency to sort of clown on aspects of Cold Steel. But, like, Cold Steel was kind of a big deal for them. There's a reason that they bothered with doing 4 of these damn things.
I imagine they were quite popular. I sure hope they were, if there's that many.
There's a reason that they are, finding excuses to bring Rain back in newer games. Like, Big deal game. But yeah, I'm getting into it. I'm enjoying the opening hours of Cold Steel 2. So I'm looking forward to where that goes. Fireminer says, Cold Steel 2 is one of those games that fans are divided between how the story is and how the story could be. How often is it that you've got an author who's ambitious and industrious enough at setting things up, but failed to follow up either because they aren't good enough or have the will to push things to its logical conclusion? I don't know what that means in this context, because I've managed to avoid spoilers, so I don't know. I think exceeding your grasp is actually much, much more common than a lot of story afflictions. I think a lot of stories are let down by some version of, I was trying to do a whole lot and I fucked up. A lot of stories where you end up seeing the seams where plots get dropped, or where you look at the unspoken underlying assumptions around a game and are like, wait, what the fuck? Not even just a game, but you know, you look at a story and it's like, wait a minute, that seems bad. And the answer is someone had ambitious ideas for concepts that they had not fully considered the implications of, and produces something that has a certain ugliness underneath that they hadn't considered when they set about writing something. But I think the other thing, when you look at since games are what we at least can pretend to know about here, the other thing to remember is that, like, you know, you run into these situations where stuff just ain't in the budget. Shit just isn't. There's no budget for that. There's no money for that. Like, down to, like, just one, something from Cold Steel 1. There's an entire section of the game that clearly just got lopped out as a budget concern. Because there's a point where, like, you just jump a month and the characters are like, yep, sure was interesting going to visit your hometown, Rain. And then later they made, like, an audio drama CD that was, like, that got translated in text form and just put XSEED's website. But it was just like, yeah, this is the audio drama of what they were doing here. And it's just like, yeah, this, some combination of budget and pacing purposes caused them to just throw this shit out. But, you know, there are a lot of concerns that aren't just like, they didn't think hard enough, or they weren't willing to. It's like, a lot of concerns come together to form these kinds of problems. Let's see, Cold Steel 2 is literally about a civil war, but people feel kiddie version of civil war with no deep interrogation of either side, the consequences of war, etc. I mean, the other thing to remember is that these are games for 14-year-olds. Go look at books for 14-year-olds about civil wars. Deep interrogation ain't what they're about. Would I enjoy that? I mean, yeah, probably, but I think it's really, really important for people to remember that most Japanese RPGs are for teenagers. We are not their target audience.
Also, does every game have to be a deep interrogation of a subject?
No. I can see the argument, like, more of them maybe should be, but also, again, like, this is like complaining that, you know, Dragon Ball is not a serious, does not have, like, a serious interrogation of intergalactic conflict. It's like, that was never what it was meant to do.
Yeah.
And I think that it would be healthy for a lot of people to sort of, like, realize what they're consuming. Not in the sense of like, you know, certainly interrogate what you like are consuming, but just be aware that like of who the actual target audience is. Like, if, you know, if I'm reading, if I'm watching, you know, any, is my internet just kind of, okay.
No, you're good. Here. You're good.
But yeah, like if I'm reading a children's book, if I'm watching a children's show, if I'm playing a game for teenagers, I don't have a reasonable expectation that it's going to, like, try to match my, like, level, completely one-to-one match my level of introspection as a 30-something adult.
Well, I don't think it's... Yeah, I don't think it's even that. Like, I don't think we need to reduce down to, like, what the target audience is. Like, if I go and see an R-rated movie about the Civil War, I expect that kind of introspection. But if I go, I know they're not R-rated, but if I go to see an R-rated Mission Impossible movie, I don't expect introspection. I expect fucking action. Like, the Legend of Heroes is not like, I don't know, Baldur's Gate 3. And it's not trying to be.
I wouldn't even say Baldur's Gate 3 is that either.
No, like I know, but not everything is trying to have a deep thought about something. I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I think that a lot of things have deeper thoughts about subjects than people necessarily give them credit for. They were still made by creative people. Mm-hmm. I think people get stuck in their head this idea of, like, the correct kind of deep thoughts to be having. And, like, you know, you can always find food for introspective thought if you're willing to look at a piece of media hard enough. And, like, you can, of course, get into the, like, was it intended? The answer is it doesn't matter. But I do think that it's important to, like, take work on what it's trying to be, not on what you think it ought to be. You know, like, it create this version in your head of what it should have been, or even to frame it as, well, this is what it could have been. Well, that's still just an unrelated product.
Yes. Yeah, I think we do that in other ways about games, too. Just, like, gameplay aspects, like,
what if it did? Why? And it's like, yeah. Well, that would change how it worked a lot.
Can't train.
There would be numerous knock-on effects from that. But yeah, like it's just, you know, I would view this as the game is what it is. Like, you know, it's okay. Let's pop into some of these other questions. What do you do when a war becomes just another background for more adventures for you and your band, who are completely neutral and morally squeaky clean? I don't know. Probably about the same thing I do when, like, the background story of a video game is about me being the hero that's going to investigate a murder. Like, the answer is that we trivialize horrible things all the time for entertainment, constantly. Like, it's kind of, it's just how, like, and it's hardly unique to Japanese RPGs or RPGs or video games. Like, it is constant and it is never ending. Our entertainment media is almost always about serious things that, like, we oftentimes would not want to have happen in real life. It just kind of, that's just, that is in part how we deal with the stresses of real life, is to fantasize about a version where we have control, where good things happen to good people. That's just, I don't particularly see this as a unique problem or even really a problem. I would describe this as simply a fact of how fiction is constructed. Mm. I, for example, don't terribly take a Fire Emblem game to task for this reason either. Seriously. What I would do is I would look at, was it entertaining in what it was trying to be? I think Legend of Heroes in general is quite entertaining at what it's trying to be. Squeaky, clean, morally unambiguous heroes? Yeah, you could make an argument about, like, your characters are generally trying to avoid being part of either faction of the Civil War. You can make an argument about Golden Mean Fallacy or whatever, and that's true of basically literally everything. I don't have to, like, I, for example, don't end up hearing much about the Golden Mean Fallacy when discussing Shin Megami Tensei, a series that uses it constantly. This seemed like a pretty silly thing to take Legend of Heroes in particular to task for. This is endemic of fantasy as a whole, of fiction as a whole. So, yeah, this does not concern me too much. Why then are people saying that Clair Obscur is more mature than Kingdom Hearts? Are people confused between looking mature and being mature? I mean, frequently. I haven't played enough Clair Obscur to say one way or the other. I've heard very good things about its writing, but I mean, I don't know. Like, I haven't played it yet
to make a judgment.
I haven't played it. What I will say is that, like, you know, there is endemic to the discourse around RPGs this concern with looking silly, like completely unmoored from being silly.
Mm.
Or not even unmoored from being silly, like, I guess a concern about looking silly that is related to being silly but which doesn't really have a healthy relationship with either. Stories that are serious being a truly serious story being treated as a story that is an endless parade of misery, that sort of thing, you know, we see quite a lot of the stories that have been lauded as the great stories of the medium over the past 10 years tend to be stories about shitty people being miserable at each other and then being sad about how they were miserable at each other.
Thankfully, Claire's here is not that. Also, you fight a mind.
Yeah. Yeah, I am not accusing Claire Obscure of that. Okay. I was actually thinking of The Last of Us when I was saying that.
Yeah, fuck that game.
Like, you know, Last of Us, Red Dead Redemption 2, you know, those kinds of games where it's just, here is a person being miserable at someone else and then being sad that they're miserable. A certain po-faced serious story aesthetic. Again, not accusing Clair Obscur. Like I said, I have not played it, and I have heard good things about its writing. But just saying that there is an aesthetic of seriousness that people cling to. And that aesthetic of seriousness is generally something that avoids certain kinds of stylization. Because, like, again, looking at Clair Obscur, obviously very stylized. But different kinds of stylized than is frequently found in Japanese developed RPGs. And I think that the tropes of those kinds of RPGs, unmoored from their aesthetics, has allowed some people to invest in a different way and have convinced themselves that produces a completely alchemically different product, and it's like, I think it's more just something you're more capable of investing in, which again is not to denigrate Clair Obscur, because by all accounts it's very good, but it is to draw attention to the idea that there are certain things that people have aversions to on an aesthetic level that they have, that they can then convince themselves is like something that is elemental to the product. But it's hard for me to describe this. Let's see. Why am I saying? Then again, Three Houses of Genealogy, the Holy War before it tried to have some more interrogation than the average Fire Emblem, but then all that remains are the Simps and the Shippers. Yeah, I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, there are, like, you know, we could look at... So let's take that concept to task. Just for a moment. Because Three Houses does attempt to create a slightly more realistic civil war. And in doing so, it tends to create... It creates its own problems. Like, yes, in creating this rosy, adventurous outlook... Trails produces something that does not examine everything as quote-unquote deeply as you could. By contrast, if you examine it, but you still want to have a tidy ending, you end up producing something that is kind of weird and doesn't quite... Like, it ultimately ends up with a lot of characters kind of have to be stubborn for really specific reasons you end up producing this thing where it's like, but it has to have a tidy ending and actual human conflict doesn't. And so you end up with something that is kind of silly for different reasons. I think of it. Let me craft an incredibly relatable metaphor that people will know well. For those 6-year-olds in the audience, professional wrestling is predetermined in terms of its outcome. I've ripped the Band-Aid off. This has been true since at least. For at least a century, the last century. And it's been true basically anywhere professional wrestling exists. In America and Japan, the way that this was made clear to the general public is very different. So in America, it just was an open secret because have you ever seen someone do an Irish whip?
Yes, I mean, no.
If you see that happen and they just like run and bounce off the ropes like a video game AI that hasn't yet been allowed to make a new move. I mean, eventually anyone looking at that is like, yeah, that's fake. Doesn't matter. The way that pro wrestling being staged became known in Japan was that one of the guys who had the tiger mask identity, I believe Satoru Sayama, unmasked and then wrote a book about how... simultaneously all those matches he was in were fake and also he could beat the shit out of any of them, which was quite a claim to be making while saying that you had been in nothing but non-competitive fights.
but in response, the early 90s, this was in the late 80s, and in the early 90s, Japanese pro wrestling saw a number of federations pretending to be real fights, because MMA didn't really exist yet. So they were still worked, they were still predetermined, they were still non-competitive, but they did everything, they hooked up as many gimmicks as possible to make the fights look real. They had fake scoring systems, they had fake round systems, they had fake rules that everyone had to abide by. All of these designed to look like real fights. And if you have ever seen actual MMA, they look even more absurd for it. One of my favorite things I ever heard a friend describe it as is that it somehow looked faker than Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior doing steroid bumper cars. One of my favorite phrases I've ever heard in my life. That's not terribly important to the metaphor. I just wanted to bring it up because I love it. But yeah, like with this kind of thing, the more you try to tell a serious story, the worse you end up if you fuck it up. If you are trying to the more you are trying to tell a realistic story, the more you look stupid when you fuck it up. When you have these fantasy stories that deal in broad emotions and high concepts, you have a lot more space to fuck up. Or to just underemphasize the real because you are focusing on the emotionality of the story. And I think that is ultimately the choice a lot of writers end up making. Like, focus on the symbolic, the broad, the emotional. Do not focus on the attempts at real. Real is a trap. It's not where emotion comes from. There can be emotion within it. It can be very affecting when done effectively. But it is also much more dangerous to do ineffectively. Let's see. Okay. Last week I asked about people having prejudice in RPGs with anime art. As a comic book reader, I'll tell you that there are some art styles that can age quite quickly and badly. Are there any Japanese RPGs that age badly in terms of look? I'm trying to think of things that aren't just a case of this was early 3D and it aged badly. Because that feels like cheating. Let's see. I mean, like, this feels bad to say, but a lot of, like, I would honestly say a lot of PS3 360 era games that are in kinda early UE look bad.
They do.
I would say that nothing so much as Dragon Age Origins, which looked not amazing, but reasonably impressive at the time, and I think is aesthetically horrendous. Like, its attempts at realism clash badly with its desire for dark fantasy, which clashes badly with how it's weirdly horny all the time, which clashes badly with the fact that everyone's like a weird, horrible mannequin. Which also clashes badly with half the time you're going to have conversations with someone while you are covered in blood. Like, just seemingly covered in viscera. Like, I talked to one of my party members while we are both just covered in the gore of something. I would say aesthetically it has aged very, very poorly. Um, Which, again, isn't to say I don't like it. I like Dragon Age 1 a reasonable amount. I think that it has pacing issues, but, you know. And speaking of... I think one of the flip side, I would say, to people trying to create... people trying to create protagonists who are above the conflict is the attempt to create realistic conflict with an, I would say, unrealistic amount of mutually earned grievance. So there is, in fiction, this idea that any a realistic conflict is one where both sides have a point, or at least a reasonable argument. And we have seen throughout history that no, sometimes people don't have a good reason for, like, plenty of people will run around and be Captain Planet villains. Like, that just happens. To argue that, you know, I will pull one that shouldn't be controversial. The American Civil War. Like, if we are looking at a literal Civil War, the American Civil War. The argument being made by the Confederates was not a reasonable one by any fair standard. The argument they made was that their right to property had been abridged. Their definition of property was humans.
No, but Dave, it was about states' rights.
States' rights to property.
To own people.
Yeah. And so, you know, like, I think there is, on that level, like, kind of a... We hold fiction to standards we would not... Like, I've heard it quipped before, and I think it's a fair joke. The difference between reality and fiction is that fiction is expected to make sense. But yeah, so I just think that there's fundamental... There's fundamental flaws, and I think that on some level, it can be useful to leave behind the notion that, like, all of these are... That this... You know, that if we're telling a war story, we need to hear all sides of the war, and they're all reasonable, and it's like, no, like, yeah, it can be fun to have stories where, like, you have all sides of a war be reasonable, but, you know, sometimes... I'll put it this way, the Empire in Star Wars is not something that ignored the existence, it was not made because they'd never thought of the idea that, like, there could be a reasonable, that two sides could both have reasonable ideas in conflict. It was, hey, remember World War II? Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, you know, and there can be interesting takes on seeing people that, like, have misrepresented grievances. Those can be interesting, but ultimately, you know, I honestly would describe, like, seeing a story that is about, you know, unreasonable actors and saying they should have, you know, and I can't say if this is what Cold Steel does because I haven't finished it, but taking a war story about unreasonable actors and saying, well, we should have seen why, we should have really understood their motivations. It's like, I don't know, like, what I saw in Cold Steel 1 was a bunch of mostly power-hungry assholes jockeying for position, and I've seen plenty of that in real life. I'm not going to sit here and say that no one does that. But, yeah. We'll probably get into that more eventually.
Yeah.
Okay. If I'm saying, I've been rereading some 90s and early aughts X-Men, Marvel 2099, early digital coloring. It's rough. It is a lot of early aughts anime that looks like just shit because the early digital coloring just does not work out very well for them. Speaking about Three Houses reminds me how many people had told me they hated Triangle Strategy's scale system. Is it possible for such an iterative system to not be messy? I don't know this system because I have not played it. Wheels, tell me what the scale system is.
There's major inflection points in the story, and you kind of have to convince your party members to go your way.
Gotcha.
It's not guaranteed.
Okay, it's impossible. Like, yes, the Fireminer asks if it's possible for that such a system to not be messy. I would say definitionally the point of such a system is to be messy. Like, persuading, like, one of the problems with video game persuasion is that underlying it is numbers. It always has to be numbers. There's just a way to fix this. If you made it truly, like, as random as the way people sometimes make decisions, people would consider it poor game design. It is a thing that you oftentimes do not want to simulate. So the method that the developers often use is obfuscation. Make it hard to tell what affected that decision. Because at least for the first playthrough, that should be enough. But I think that, you know, asking is it possible for that not to be messy is to ignore that it, at least based on your description, Wheels. Yeah, it sounds like, at least based on your description, the point was for it to be messy.
Yeah.
The point was for it to be difficult and kind of unclear how it worked and how you fixed it. And that brings us to, like, one of the other problems that this kind of thing has. People playing games hate feeling like something was taken out of their control. Even if there was a good and strategic reason to remove something from your control, a thematically appropriate reason, a compelling narrative reason to remove the player's agency, players get so mad. They get so mad. They hate it so much. Like, it's taken so long for the Saga games to develop, like, you know, one of our favorite hobby horses, it's taken so long for the Saga games to develop a fandom in English because they just make it hard to make plans. You just have to adapt to things. They took agency from the player in terms of what their build was going to be because sometimes things just happen. Like, and you kind of, you know, and people will get mad about that. People always get mad about that. If you look at the patterns of what people get angry about over and over and over, it's having their expectations challenged basically at any point. Like, I have had to, like, I recall a mere 5 years ago when Final Fantasy VII Remake came out and people were talking about how there needed to be some sort of lawsuit for false advertising because different things happened in the remake. Oh, it looks like Wales just stepped away. But yeah, like, the people, like, there is a degree to... There is so much the attitude that a player having their expectations challenged is a problem that needs to be fixed. I expected one thing to happen and something else happened, and I don't understand why, and that means there's a problem. And it just is not a healthy way to interact with really anything. But it's also like a guarantee that art will never be it cannot be interesting. It can't surprise you in any way because it was like you decided in your head before you interacted with it what it was meant to do and express, and then it didn't. And, you know, sometimes that'll lead to disappointment because you imagine something grander and more complex, and the ultimate underlying reasoning was pretty simple. And sometimes that'll mean that a piece of art gets to surprise you by being a lot more complex than you ever thought it could be, by having a lot of underlying reasoning that you hadn't thought of before the developer threw it at you, before the creator, the writer, the, you know, the director, the actors, before anyone involved like forced into your hands the necessity to interpret something you weren't expecting. Both of those things will happen. It's okay. You just need to learn to take something as it is rather than like being upset that it isn't what it set out to be. And Wheels is back.
Yeah.
And I have just finished my rant. But yeah, it's one of those things like you just have to let these things be. There's always going to be a section of the audience upset that their expectations were not met, or like that something went against their expectations, whether that means it wasn't as ambitious as they expected or it was more ambitious than they were expecting. There will always be people who are upset that you did anything. Fireman says, are you saying that stories like Old Man Logan shouldn't be taken seriously even though the author wants it to be because it starts from a beyond ridiculous premise? Wolverine murders the ultimate Marvel Universe. No, I'm not saying that story. I honestly definitely believe in the idea of taking a story seriously even by taking it on its own terms. Old Man Logan is absolutely on its own terms meant to be taken seriously, but it works on a pretty heightened, like you are starting from a very high concept in the traditional sense. You are starting from the understanding of who of this is a mutant man who is essentially doomed to outlive everyone he has ever known, and now he's at the end of his life. That's a pretty high concept. And I think it's reasonable to take that seriously in its own context. But we're starting from a pretty heightened concept of reality. Like, Old Man Logan is serious, but it's not realistic. That's really mostly, like, I'm not sure what this was in specific response to. So if you want to, like, re-clarify what that was in response to, I'd be happy to go back and sort of clarify what those are. What do you think about the look and aesthetic of late aughts to early 10s RPGs from Japan, like Type Zero, Infinite on Discovery, Last Remnant, Resonance of Fate, etc.? Also, does anyone remember Sigma Harmonix? I remember its name. I've definitely never played it, and I don't think I looked too much at it. I would say that those are, in general, kind of ugly for kind of the same reasons. They're slightly more stylized, but they're from a period where a lot of them are kind of trying to be less stylized. Like, shading that looks like animation's largely falling out of favor in that era. Like, I'll put it this way, I think that the PS2 .hackGU games look infinitely better than any of those, even before they remastered them. Like, games that are still not properly cel-shaded, but they are very anime-styled. Whereas you look at something like Type Zero, Infinite on Discovery, Garou from the Last Hope, they're not sufficiently stylized. They're in this off-putting half-step. Like, they're stylized enough that you wouldn't mistake them for trying to be real-looking, but they're not stylized enough to, like, have a real sense of style. It's just kind of a cop-out way of phrasing it, but you know, the stylization ends at like kind of a reasonably sculpted doll, and so you end up with something that's just like, oh, this is just sort of odd looking, just kind of unpleasant, detailed, but Yeah, that's maybe where the problem arises. The stylization is more detailed, but detailed enough that you realize how simple the underlying style is, and it's in part like an issue with what was trendy in like Japanese art at the time, where if you look at 2D art at the time, it's also few lines, rounded, very stylistically undetailed. There's a lot of art from that era that's just like large, smooth lines, very, very, as few lines as they can get away with. Smooth, large, uninterrupted colors. You end up with, and you know, you put that in 3D and it's, you know, newly higher resolution, and you end up with something that kind of looks like it is missing something. It's stylistically incomplete feeling to me. Okay. About the FF7 remake lawsuit that you said, isn't that just another expression of the thing people said they don't like about it, that they just want a self-contained story that fits? The thing is that those people were not just complaining that it wasn't just one game. They were complaining that it was, that it did different things. Like, it's like, it's, you know, if this was one game, they'd still be mad, because it was their idea of a remake was something that made no changes. It was just the original game in higher resolution with new graphics, which are changes, but don't worry about it. Like,
that's not a remake.
I mean, it's kind of a remake. It's a recreation. We could talk about phrasing for it, but like, quite separate from people saying it should have been one game, we can have that argument. It doesn't, like, that's at least an argument to be had. I definitely saw people threatening a lawsuit because, like, they said it was a remake and then there were things that were different, so it's, they false advertised this remake. I definitely saw that. It was kind of incredible. Because, like, again, if someone says, I wish it had just been one game, there's at least an argument we can have about that. If someone is saying they made changes to this remake, and that means that it is not a remake anymore, that is someone so categorically unwilling to have their expectations challenged that it would be impossible to satisfy that kind of person. You could not produce something that did that, because, like, the very notion of having to interpret a work in order to remake it, that the notion that in order to remake something you have to decide what the original was, would be lost on them. An unwillingness to accept that as an act of interpretation. Like, that's what I'm getting at. That kind of person who, you know, and I'm doing my best not to bring up other contexts I've seen these kinds of people in, because they inevitably end up political. But there is a kind of person who rejects the notion that to interact with text is always to interpret it. That there is no objective interpretation of any text. And that kind of person exists in fiction as much as anything. The inescapable notion of that there is just pure version of it that has been perverted by the notion that someone read it.
It makes no sense.
Yeah, it's deranged. It requires someone to have never considered beyond their own perspective. Don't worry about it. Let's see. Has FF10 2 aged worse than FF10 10 because of how it firmly anchored itself in 2003. I mean, I don't feel like it's much more anchored in 2003 than FF10 is in 2001. Like, you could say, oh, it starts with a pop concert, and I would respond, FF10 starts with a nu metal song. Crop Top recently had a resurgence before people realized that you've got to have a model's body to be able to pull it off. Yeah, I mean, like, you could point at some of the fashion, but, like, a lot of it was stuff people wouldn't have worn then, and a lot of Nomura's designs were always kind of early 2000s core, because that's when he was making them. Go look at, World Ends With You, extremely 2007 core. I think people give that one more of a pass just because it was set in the real world, but it's just one of those things like, yeah, there's a lot of 2001 in FF10. I think 10-2 has always been more of an object of scrutiny. People have always taken issue with it. But yeah, people have always taken more of an issue with 10-2, and I think this is just another manifestation of that. Like, people have issues, rightly or wrongly, with its sheer difference of presentation from 10, but 10's a 2001 ass video game.
Yeah.
It has a lot of choices that make it feel very of its time. It's just, people are less inclined to scrutinize 10 for a number of reasons, fair and unfair. What you just said about late aughts JRPG, does that mean something dull like Stellar Blade will age badly and look? I mean, I don't think Stellar Blade looks good now. Nuclear take. Yeah, I'm gonna be cruder than I usually would. Even as a game designed to get people horny, I don't even think Stellar Blade's very good at that. Yeah. I think Hyung Tae Kim's earlier art, I think his Magna Carta era art is better looking if you're just like, I just want a video game to crank off to. Those designs are better than what's in Stellar Blade. Those look better as models than Stellar Blade because they're stylized, and Stellar Blade's weird doll aesthetic is just like, man, you are the most boringly horny human being imaginable. That's all I'll say about that. People are already saying that GTA 5 looks like a PS2 game next to GTA 6. I don't think those people know what a PS2 game looks like.
What?
I especially don't think they know what a PS2 era GTA game looks like. I want to bring up, because this may have been forgotten to time, those games were considered pretty ugly for their time.
Yes, they sure were. There's not one. Like, them being pretty is not the reason anyone played those games, because they were looked like butt.
Yeah, they're kind of stylized, but probably not stylized enough.
No.
Speaking of the discussion we've been having, they're a little like, and they get kind of bad. Like, I think honestly, of those three, Vice City probably looks the best. It's the most stylized looking. It's the, like, it's all in on that neon and 80s kitsch. I think that one's look holds up the best. I think the PS2 version of San Andreas actually looks significantly better than basically all of its follow-ups, because, like, it's using PS2 effects to nail the, like, LA smog look, and so it has a more pleasing environmental look. I think basically all subsequent versions of San Andreas kind of fuck up how it's supposed to look. But, yeah, like, those games were never lookers. GTA 5 looks fine. It's a late PS3 game, and it looks like it. Certainly modern games look better. I don't think they look... Like, GTA 6 is a very impressive looking game, because it is a game made by approximately a bazillion people, and made for approximately a bajillion dollars. It's very, very pretty. But yeah, it's comparing a late PS5 game to a late PS3 game, it's kind of just an absurd choice to begin with. Like, Yeah, as it turns out, there should be some difference between these two things. But I'm going to put it to you. GTA San Andreas to GTA 5 is a much bigger leap to me than GTA 5 to GTA 6. And that's not a knock on GTA 6. A very impressive looking video game, obviously. But, you know, like, I'd still say that the leap from GTA San Andreas to GTA 5 is a much more stark one.
Getting diminishing returns on graphics.
Diminishing returns on graphics. I would like to also point out that between San Andreas and 5 was 9 years. Between 5 and 6 is going to be more on the order of 13 years. Yeah. Let's see. I think I put up this question once, but you didn't answer it. What if you put a game where the character's designing principle is to make them as mundane as possible? There's a rotoscope anime called The Flowers of Evil that did that, and even then it was pretty expressive in terms of character, facial expression, movement. I think there's ways you can make that happen. I do think that if you're making that choice, you need to have, like, an underlying reason to do it. How to put this. If you're trying to make characters look mundane, you're sacrificing things like identifiable silhouettes. Like, it's not impossible to make a mundane character with an identifiable silhouette, but you're making it very hard on yourself, and you're kind of accepting that the paths that will make the most identifiable silhouettes are locked off from you. So you kind of end up having to make choices about what you're doing to make that work. I think if you're gonna make mundane looking characters, it kind of needs to work with the fact that, like, okay, mundane looking characters, presumably realistic mundane world, like. Because mundane looking characters in fantasy world just ends up making it look like you kind of did a bad job. Because you had infinite choices. Like, you could use mundane characters in the fantasy world to indicate what kind of fantasy world you're looking at. But ultimately, you need to, your concept needs to match with that. It can't just be, we made mundane characters in a vacuum. The concept needs to end up using that, or else you're just kind of in a rough spot. Better than you? No one. You killed everybody else. I think when you do designs that are mundane, you bring up the expressiveness of the Flowers of Evil. I would say that, like, you do end up needing to make these more mundane characters move in a way that is more characteristic. Like, the expression of the characters needs to come from how the, like, their key poses and their animation, and that in itself is can be asking a lot in terms of the technical budget. Like, you have to have modeling and animation budgets go up in order to make up, so to speak, for the mundanity of the actual core designs. Does Far Cry Primal look mundane, or is that the actual, or is it that the actual Stone Age is boring? I mean,
I think
I have seen approximately 3 minutes of Far Cry Primal.
Game is boring.
Yeah, I'm just like, I don't know its aesthetic very well. Still $30? How long ago was that game out?
It was a long time ago.
2016, that game's 9 years old. Oh, but don't worry, it came out on Google Stadia in 2022.
Oh, no.
Incredible. 6 years on, it's time. I want to talk about Stadia just long enough to bring up how fucking funny it is that there are Final Fantasy 15 minigames that are lost media because they were only in the Stadia version and they sucked. They're terrible. I don't know if someone modded those into the PC version. Probably, but holy shit, those things were funny. Go look up those videos. It's just like, we have made a Stadia exclusive content. What is it? It's a fucking RC car minigame that controls like shit. Why? And breaks constantly.
Why?
One of the funniest things I've ever seen. Why? You know exactly why. Google paid for exclusive content and did not have specific enough rules in the contract about what that had to be.
Oh, God.
Funniest fucking thing I've ever seen. 2022. How long was the Stadia wasn't long for this world in 2022. When did this happen?
I don't know.
This was discontinued like 6 months after that came out. There's a very brief, like, there must be like 36 people who experienced Far Cry Primal only through Stadia. I need to look up what Stadia Reddit looks like now. I misspelled Stadia. I was like, why am I getting Stadio? That's weird. Nope, Stadia. Okay, I need to see this. Community highlights, Stadia controller, how to enable Bluetooth. And someone saying that they tried playing another cloud gaming solution and it made them miss Stadia. It was very beloved by a very specific set of people.
Why, Fireminer? Why?
Oh God.
Why? Why would you bring up that series?
Oh no. I'm losing my mind at how many times I've seen this particular developer be brought up without without talking about his profound number of incredibly bad takes. I don't even want to say his name. Other than to say that he is a guy who I will. I've seen this guy quoted like multiple times over the past few weeks, and it's just like it. I quipped on Blue Sky. It should be considered journalistic malpractice to bring up this man's opinions without bringing up that he once complained that video games media was racist against non-Japanese developers.
Oh dear.
Yeah, dude's got extreme pudding brain. Far Cry. My mother says Far Cry 6 looks pretty mundane to me. Then again, I'm the kind of guy who thinks the Nicaragua Falls is pretty unimpressive. I mean, like, it's kind of what you get when you're like highest order concern is to look like real life, is that you're going to end up producing a lot of things that look kind of mundane, because even if something is objectively deeply impressive in real life, one, when you're not seeing it in real life, you don't get the full effect, for the same reason that like looking at a picture of a beautiful place in nature is less impressive than actually being there. And two, you're showing people things that they're more likely to have already seen. I'm playing Breath of Fire 3 on PC. Is it weird that it makes me think I could have been playing Breath of Fire 4? I feel like, in general, like, when you have series like that, where, like, there's a lot of stylistic and thematic similarity between entries, people will tend to gravitate more towards their favorite entry. And that can invite that kind of comparison. Like, you know, I think that a lot of people who have really strong opinions about Super Metroid are having a more emotionally unhealthy version of I wish I was playing Super Metroid with when they play things like Fusion or Dread, because they see something that has a lot of aesthetic and stylistic similarity, and it just reminds them of the game they'd rather be playing. Personally, I'd rather be playing Dread, but that's neither here nor there, but I'm just pulling up, like, examples of...
It is better than Super Metroid.
I agree. but what I was going to say was, like, for example, like, me with Paper Mario and Thousand Year Door, like, Thousand Year Door is mechanically a more interesting and a better game, but I am fonder of Paper Mario 1, so when I'm playing Thousand Year Door, I end up mostly, like, whenever I hit one of those sections I don't like, because it's the game just telling you to sit around and talk to everyone, and it's like making a joke about how much it's wasting your time, I end up thinking I could just be playing Paper Mario, the one that has a lot of what I'm getting from this, but in a package I like better. And I think that, like, anything that has sequels like that can produce that, to some greater or lesser extent. You know, to throw it again to a classic one, if I'm playing Sonic the Hedgehog 1, sometime late in Marble Zone, I'm going to think to myself, I could just be playing Sonic 2. At any point, I could just be playing Sonic 2. How many works of fiction are like Hakenden? As you've got a lot of references, but very few game adaptations. Like Romantic Saga, having eight playable characters was a reference to Hakenden, right? I don't know enough about Hakenden to say for sure if that was intentional. I think a lot of times you'll end up seeing this with things that are... difficult to adapt for one reason or another. You'll see a lot of references to them without actually adapting them directly. They might be difficult to adapt because of non-traditional narrative structures or being either uniquely too long or uniquely too short. So folklore references tend to be this. Like, you wouldn't make a game out of most bits of folklore, but you'll probably allude to it because...
Hello.
Hi there.
Hello.
I have a feeling I could probably talk about this question more if I knew what the question was.
The question was, Fireminer was saying, how many works of fiction are like Hakenden, where you've got a lot of references but very few game adaptations? Like Romancing Saga having eight playable characters was a reference to Hakenden, right?
Yeah. Pretty sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of this falls into cultural backdrop. Where... I mean, if you're watching any random piece of Western media and you can immediately identify if a character is based on Little Red Riding Hood.
Yeah.
That level of obvious in here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know some games that really, really do it crazy, like, I mean, Tengai Makyo.
Everyone massively. Loves Tengai Makyo.
Yeah, but, I mean, I mean, especially the first one, but pretty much all of them are the kind of games where you need a guide with notations to tell you what is being made fun of.
Yeah, I mean, the entire joke is that you know Japan well enough to know how fucking weird this dude's being.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I played through Jiraiya, the original game in the cell phone version, and I was happy to have gotten most of the references that I did, including, oh, I have actually seen two episodes of this particular period samurai drama that this character is a joke on.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of thing. But yeah. There is a lot in there, but a lot of it is this sort of thing where, like there's an entire class of adjectives in English or in European languages that are directly based on Greek mythology, but we don't necessarily think of them that way. That level of deep dive at times. But yeah, other than things that were blatantly based on very specific works of fiction, it's just in there. Stuff that's in there. Okay, good example. Again, Saga series, Saga Frontier 2. The one mini chapter where the assassin who switched sides is defending King Gustav from an invasion force, knowing that he's not going to survive this, but he's holding them off as long as possible, is a direct reference to the historical figure Benkei guarding the bridge for Yoshitsune back in the 13th century.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. And again, that's the kind of reference that anybody who sat through Japanese history class in high school will recognize these references.
Mm-hmm.
They may recognize them better as references through other references of other references, but they'll recognize them. I mean, if you put somebody from a completely different cultural perspective in and ask them what it was a reference to, they might say something like Horatio at the bridge. If you are in any way knowledgeable about Roman history, and that's probably the most comparable situation I can think of to Benkei. Mm-hmm. But I don't think most Westerners would even know that reference in Latin anymore. So I had to look it up myself once. Okay. Did you have any other examples you could think of, though?
Not immediately. Like, that's why I was drawing on, like, folklore, this kind of thing, where it's like cosmic background radiation, and not the sort of thing that you would necessarily think to make a full story about, but that you would, like, reference even almost reflexively.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for that matter, the Legend of Zelda Link to the Past references the Golden Axe, Silver Axe folktale.
Yeah, the old Honest Axe concept.
Yeah,
it's just an entire like genre of a lot of Zelda games end up doing some version of that because it's iconic.
Yeah. And Warishibi Choja, which is Warishibi Choja is, I don't even know how to translate the title properly, but it's a folktale that's very similar concept to the Little Red Paperclip.
Mm-hmm.
Or you just keep trading something, you keep trading, like you start with something completely useless, but you just keep trading up and trading up, and eventually you get something that you really want.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that kind of
side quest in Zelda. To...
I mean, that side quest in Zelda in English is often referred to as the Little Red Paperclip side quest, and in Japanese it's the Warishibi side quest.
Yeah, Warishibi Choja. I've sometimes seen that translated as Straw Millionaire.
That's, I mean, for the fact that it's not technically straw and he's not technically a millionaire, but sure, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's this idea of, you know, the trading quest as a concept in a game is this.
Yeah. And I think I read something where the gang who put Link's Awakening together created that quest line as a specific reference to it. Just because they
yeah,
really
I would be shocked if they weren't. Iwata asks there was an Iwata asks where it was acknowledged that Warishibi Choja was in fact the inspiration for the trading quest concept in Zelda.
I mean, there's really no other thing that could have been.
There's nothing else it could be, but they did go on record and say that's where it came from.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to remember where the little red paperclip term came from, except I know that some guy in Canada a couple years ago actually went and did it.
Yeah. Canadian blogger.
Even then, he was basing it on the story of the little red paperclip and not making it up himself.
But yeah, same concept.
Yeah. But yeah, there's just, I mean, it's like trying to track the impact of Grimm's fairy tales on American or European, but even also American pop culture. You just find references all over the place without realizing it. Any other good questions today, or
We've just been hitting what Fire Miner's got.
Well, any questions that you have about Japanese folklore or fairy tales? Because I've probably forgotten.
We sure could advertise a book right now while they're not expecting it, so that they don't tune out.
Yeah. So, audience, if you are interested in Japanese folktales, I've got an entire collection of them. This time, they're all animal based or animal focused. It's called Tanuki as a Teapot by Michael Yarimizu, Yarimizu, illustrated by Michael Yarimizu. Yes, I actually did this pen, paper, pencil, everything.
Oh yeah,
just because I could. The dedication is two parts dedication to four different people. The first two are to Yanagida Kunio and Lafcadio Hearn for, you know, inspiring me to actually collect folktales the way they did. And the other two are to Antoine de Saint-Exupéry and, name blanks for me at the moment, but the author of Dr. Doolittle, for showing me that, you know what, if you really want to, you can illustrate your own books. Go ahead. Yeah.
And you can now you can see the... And you can see the results of those if you're willing to buy my book.
Oh, it's on Kindle Unlimited as well, if you really want. Yeah. Honestly, it's a nice paperback.
Subscribe to my book. And there's other books, too.
There's lots of other books, but any other questions we can answer first? Because that was just opportunistic.
Yeah, no, I was teeing you up for that one. let's see. Let's see, next question. Has anyone here played any Monty Python game? I think I played a little Monty Python's Complete Waste of Time.
I haven't actually played any games that were directly based on Monty Python. I've played a couple role-playing games or tabletop games that were very variously inspired by it. Not necessarily.
Every tabletop role-playing game is at least a little inspired by Holy Grail, whether they admit it or not.
Oh, yeah, I make a full reference to that in one book. It's just like, yeah, here's a movie, and you know what? I mean, you've been playing these games long enough, you should probably see what every game table eventually devolves into if you're not careful. And then the rest of the book is
no
like...
No escape.
Yeah. And the rest of the book has various references to Monty Python and the Holy Grail. So, to the point my dad was reading and he was like, are you sure you didn't put too many references in there? I'm like, any in-jokes are a gift to myself. I mean, yeah. It's like, in-jokes are not a gift to the audience. No, they're a gift to the writer, and if the audience enjoys them, that's all better. So. I actually did finish Atelier Yumiya.
Yay.
And it ended appropriately with the heroine delivering a flying drop heel kick to the ultimate villain's face.
What could you want?
Nice.
Yeah, she's very dance coded. I mean, dance and parkour coded, so it's all kicks with her.
So. Respect.
Yes.
So 10 out of 10.
It was a good one, yeah. I mean, I could think of various ways to make it better, but it was still a very good game. And still, I mean, I can understand, again, like I mentioned last week, I can understand some of the complaints on the channel, and I'm like, I'm just not playing it in a way that forces you to go through it at 8 hours at a time.
Important. So,
yeah. So I'm just like, oh, I'm back on for a few more minutes. Let's go check one area, see if I can find more ley lines. Yay. Jump around.
Jump around. Wait, no. A couple more from Fire Miner. What are some successful and failed examples of authors knowing something is bad but trying to be clever about it? Remember the end of Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Well, that's because they kind of ran out of money.
Yeah, well, that's the point. Like, they understand that something... that whatever is here is going to be disappointing and just sort of rolling with it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, Monty Python's a bad example to be using this because you know they're going to somehow turn their inability to pay for anything into an advantage. Okay. So, disappointing ending.
An ending about, but an ending making fun of its own lack of climax, I guess.
I've read some really poorly done attempts at comedy that try this.
Oh no.
Yeah, I mean, like, I really should not name and shame on some of these, because, nah. But one of these was definitely, I think one of the blurbs on the back of the book actually made comparisons to Monty Python and Terry Pratchett. Those were not really apt comparisons, because this was very much closer to National Lampoon's Board of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever read that?
Yeah, I do. I haven't read it, but I've read of it. I know what you're talking about.
So it was very much Board of the Rings style humor and presentation, and it's funny, isn't it? But it kind of lacked the essential element to Board of the Rings, which was the fact that there was also Lord of the Rings to be obviously making fun of. It veered more, so for the plot, the tone was very much Board of the Rings. The plot and setting were more attempting to be Land of Oz, with the kind of crazy, everything is mixed up situations, except it didn't do that very well either.
Mm-hmm.
Again, combination of being too on the nose and not on the nose enough at times. And strange enough, way too much Deus Ex Machina. It was a book where you could tell they were intentionally setting it up for something kind of unfulfilling at the end and laughing about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I got it as a Christmas present. I cannot complain too much for any money lost, because it's not my money. But, yeah. That's the kind of book I'm thinking of when I would say it tries to laugh at its own ending and doesn't do it very well.
Let's see.
Anyway, go find a copy of Board of the Rings to read, just so that you can enjoy inspired name games like the Elven Prince Lego Lamb and the Kingdoms of Four-Door and Two-Door.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. I'm trying to think.
There's already a real Two-Door.
Yeah. I mean, but that's what I mean. It's like,
yeah,
this particular book was that level of, oh, see what we did, ha-ha humor.
Yeah.
Whereas, I mean, obviously, I like to write funny stuff, but my stuff is more like, in retrospect, if you think about it kind of a bit, you realize that this entire previous sequence between the anthropomorphic cat and the swashbuckling mouse man is actually a complicated reference to Cyrano de Bergerac's insult duel scene, with elements of the Tom and Jerry Mouseketeers episodes, a reference to Adam's Family, the movie, and also Secret of Monkey Island.
Good memories from Monkey Island.
Yes. I mean, just making a joke about waving it like a feather duster. That was the main reference there, but...
Okay. Next question. With the Switch 2's Joy-Con able to be used as a mouse, what are the chances of Duck Hunt 99 being a thing? That would be really funny, and I would want to know how that worked. I feel like I would be assaulted by hundreds of ducks, and I don't like that.
Duck! Yes.
That's a duck.
That too.
How many light gun games have you played with a mouse? I've seen them. I've never actually played them because I don't like playing normal games with a mouse, and a mouse just is less tactile to me than a light gun, but they do work. At least they look like a... I mean, the fundamental idea is not dissimilar. I'd sooner take an accelerometer pointer control over using a mouse to play a light gun game, personally. People my age used to pass on to each other pirate copies of the PC ports of Virtua Cop 2 and House of the Dead 2. Yeah, I remember that. But yeah, I was not the type to play mouse-controlled light gun games, even though they kind of make sense. It might be interesting to see some attempt to have accelerometer and or mouse control light gun games make a return. I'd like to see those. But I don't have strong confidence in it at all. I'm sorry, I might be tired.
Yeah.
Sorry to do that right after Gaijin gets here. Gaijin, ambush them with another book plug.
Okay, so the most recent one out is Lit RPG, which kind of fits our podcast here better, I guess. Lit RPG being basically some form of either fantasy or science fiction or some weird mixture of both, where the main character is placed into a setting, situation, world, alternate dimension, wherever, that enforces, basically video game mechanics of some manner. Most often this involves some form of stat control and character stat management. It can vary wildly between iterations of the genre. There's still a lot of fluctuation going on how to define this genre, and lots of arguments. Have fun if you get your head stuck in this. Ant pile. So this one is called Vainglorious, Long as the Night, and it's specifically a Metroidvania-styled lit RPG. Just because I was looking around and there didn't seem to be any, and I had an idea for a Metroidvania game plot. Just randomly come to me one day while I was standing in the back of a classroom doing nothing at all that day. So I figured, hey, why not try this? And it came out fun. Came out weird. I had been playing probably too many too many Metroidvanias that year, and you could see bits and pieces of them throughout the concepts for game mechanics and stuff. Vainglorious Long as the Night by Michael Yarimizu, again on Kindle and Kindle Unlimited. This one comes in two different ebook formats because I really tried hard to keep all the interesting formatting decisions I made for the print version. But I finally succeeded in making an ebook that had all of these formatting items. However, that makes it non-compatible with landscape viewing or dark mode. And we had a good friend here on the site who prefers to read with landscape viewing and dark mode, and so he asked me if I could please change something up, and turns out they won't let you change that format after publication, so I just had to publish a second ebook for reflowable text. So, pick your poison. There's two options to choose from. One of them, or just order the paperback. It's a nice size one. Okay. And let's see.
Bye, Mike. Yeah!
There we go.
He's going to neither of you. There we go. Okay.
It's me, Mario!
God fucking damn it.
Oh, come on, we can do that ourselves. It's me, Mario! Okay, we don't need a soundboard for that one.
How do I ban Wheels from his own server?
I don't think you can. No, you can't. Sorry.
I can't. It's literally impossible. That was part of the point of the joke. So you can catch us at our no longer new but still relatively new time of 9 PM Pacific, midnight Eastern on Mondays. If you want to ask us questions like dear friend Fireminer did,
You can also ask us questions in the RP Gamer Discord by going to rpgamer.com and clicking the community tab where you can get a Discord invite. If you go to the podcast section, put a question in there, we will assume it's for us unless it's addressed directly to someone else, at which point we will probably answer it anyway if it's interesting. You can also ask us questions in the comments section under this very episode on rpgamer.com, not in an iTunes review or something. We don't read those. But comment section under this very episode or any recent-ish episode we try to keep track of on rvgamer.com, and we will answer your questions. Otherwise, you can also watch our sister show Shenanigans. This coming week is likely to be a potpourri of old Capcom fighting games that's included on Capcom Fighting Collection 2. Typically it'll be whatever. If we're tired and bored, Wheels and Joe will usually end up playing Marvel Rivals or something, but if we have pause and reason, we will play other things. It's a weird world out there. Who knows what might be involved. But yeah, I think that about covers all of our plugs, so I will say
I didn't mention Princesses of the Pizza Parlor, but
oh yeah, you missed that.
But yeah, just Google Michael Yarimizu, MAIKELYARIMIZU. It's practically the only thing that you will find searching it up, which is kind of the point. So just check stuff out. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. There's lots to read.
Check the author page on Amazon.com. Exactly. And with that, I will say, see you, Space Cowboy. Okay.
See ya.
This is Mole Man in the Morning. Good Mole Man to you.